stupid. He comes across in front of me every single time he overtakes. Where does he want me to go off the track?
No!
Stop talking to me in the braking zone!
No, seriously. Has anyone seen my car? Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
You are the world champion!
Do you know how weird it is, like, doing two intros to what is essentially the same show within an hour and a half of each other? It's a really weird sensation. Hi guys, I'm Andre Harrison. Welcome to episode 119 or 120 of Motorsport 101. We don't quite know what order these are going to go out in yet. We'll figure this out later.
Hello everyone and welcome to the third hour of Monday Night Raw.
Oh God, that's really what this feels like, isn't it? Like,
I'm Joe Buck. Welcome to the top of the 19th. Sun grows larger. Yes, sun engulfs the world in flames. God, yes,
yes. This is what I signed up for. yeah, this was awesome. I'm going to spare you the trouble on this one, but yeah, this is our second, like, little mini episode taping part thingy, but we're doing this now basically to talk about the American stuff. We basically saved most of the European stuff to one block, but we put Gurney's in there to kind of balance the books. We're a really professional podcast outfit, you guys. Sadly, Katie isn't with us on this part of the show, but she's on the other one. So if you haven't listened to that already, we're talking about Formula E and Marrakesh, Autosport, and Dan Gurney. Check that out if you haven't already. And come back for this one. So, you know, that's always fun. It depends on what chronological order we end up putting this up. We don't know yet. We'll figure it out later. All we know is that the America one will definitely be up before Saturday. Probably. So.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Like, I like to be modest about these things. I'm just making sure. but we have me, King, RJ, and Zay with you for the second half of this recording. Well, in terms of actual breaking the fourth wall, in terms of order we've actually recorded, this is the second part. So, let's get into the B side of the recording, the American stuff. And, King, like, we had Joseph Newgarden on a cool stage, and we officially unveiled the IndyCar 2018 Aero Kit.
Yes, the Universal Aero Kit, otherwise known as
UAK. It sounds like somebody being sick. It's like UAK.
Something along those lines. Sounds like a Scottish conjunction. Hi, Zoe. We love you very, very much, and your contributions to the podcast and to Motorsport fandom in general are very much appreciated.
Yes, for you listeners, you can hear Zoe give the longest sigh I've ever heard.
That's got to be a record for this show. We've done 120 of these, and that's got to be the longest, like, prolonged sigh we've ever had. That takes some doing, Zoe. Well played. Well played. You're officially a member of the team now. Welcome aboard.
Nah, I'd like to revoke her team status after what happened before the show.
So King, do you want to talk about that by any chance?
No, we're moving on.
Yeah. It's been revoked for what we call a pre-show violation that we totally won't talk about on a hangout at some point. Because that never happens with people or guests on this show, especially when it comes to their love lives. Anyway, IndyCar. It's like, great, they got the Universal Aero Kit on display, which was really nice, because they had, like, a who's who of the really cool guys in IndyCar unveiling it. Isn't that right, King?
Yes, yes. On hand were IndyCar CEO Mark Miles, reigning champion Joseph Newgarden, you know, iconic team owner Roger Penske, Mario Andretti, pretty much the who's who of the IndyCar world were there to say, hey, we've got a new car, we're heading in an exciting new direction, come with us, please.
Like, please, can we get a third engine? Like, please, can we get some more back in here? Because, like, this car looks really cool, yo. And it's like, yeah, like, Problem is, we kind of knew that like 6 months ago. Like, the car was going to look really nice.
Yes.
It's like, you know, it's kind of a damp squib in terms of, like, unveiling, like,
yeah,
stuff that we already knew about.
We've also seen it in testing, which it still looks really nice.
Yes.
Of course. No one's denying that. The problem is, like, you're unveiling something that we've all already seen, which is just a bit of a bummer. But, you know,
was,
we had a bunch of cool IndyCar guys announce it instead, which is really
nice. Yeah, it wasn't for us. It was for the North American International Auto Show, which is the largest auto show in North America, if the title doesn't imply that already. And so you have, you know, all the, you know, the biggest auto manufacturers in the world trying to say, hey, we want to sell our cars in North America. You know one thing that'll help that? Competing in IndyCar.
Yeah. So who was out there for? I think I saw Roger Penske out there on Katie Hargett's Instagram, and I saw, like,
Mark Miles was there. IndyCar, General Motors, Mark Roos of General Motors, Jay Fry was there, President of Competition and Operations of IndyCar. Of course, we got Roger Penske. Ennio Arcangeli Jr., Senior Vice President of American Honda Motor Company. So you had pretty much all the big names. Oh, and Mario Andretti was there, of course, naturally.
Yes,
of course.
With Mario pointing out, the biggest problem was the fact that he didn't actually have a ride in this car.
Maybe they'll build a two-seater for it.
They'll figure this out. It's Mario. They'll figure out something for him.
Listen to that section. Roger's going to, like, organize him a car.
Oh, snap.
Why? Because Roger Penske. That's why. When Roger Penske says it, it goes. Basically. So yeah, that's really cool. But yeah, just reminding people that we already saw the know here that, yeah, the car is gorgeous. My God. I want diecasts on my shelf immediately. Preferably with number 5 on it.
Joseph's fanboying as he described it, and how it was going to improve the racing and what the aims of it were and all that was fantastic. And then he turned around and went, like, when JR had said, like, he done really well, Joseph was like, yeah, I've listened to you do your talks, like, your tech talks, and he used, like, JR as the inspiration for how he did it, which was quite nice.
So
JR Hildebrand and his sweet, sweet Camaro cut, giving back to the sport even when he's out.
Yes.
NBC hired because, this man.
Yes.
Why? Because he has great hair. Ah, as you do. But yeah, again, I'm very glad they had Newgarden there front and center, because he needs to be there. I said it before, I did Dre Briefs on this. Newgarden needs to be on the posters for everything. He is a handsome young man and a devilishly good racer. Like, all of this, please. Thank you.
Yeah,
awesome.
He only backs the best hockey teams. That's just a statement of fact.
He didn't take a selfie with PK Subban. I was very disappointed.
yeah, that is definitely true. Though, way back when he first visited the team, he did get to see Shea Weber, now the Montreal Canadiens, blast a shot into the net from the other side of the arena in the 300 level.
Yikes.
That was wonderful. That was very, very wonderful. If I may, I also had a chance to listen to another podcast similar to ours. Got to hear Racer.com's Marshall Pruitt basically give some insight of what to expect from this car and how it races. We could probably expect to see drivers like Scott Pruitt and Will Power, who are constantly comfortable at the edge of control all the time, have a really good time with this car. A driver like Sebastian Bourdais, who always needs a planet car, it's going to be interesting. He's still going to be good because he's Sebastian Bourdais, but he's probably not going to be happy with the way the car behaves, at least at first.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a good thing for rookie drivers either.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing I was thinking about. Like, some of these rookies are going to have a splendid time, and some of them are going to have just the worst time, with even less aero.
My newcomer IndyCar klaxon just kicked in here. It's like, hey, but guys, cars are meant to be difficult. It's the top pinnacle of motorsport, klaxon kicked in there. So, like, my historical reference there just kicked up there. My bad, continue.
No, but, like, say you're used to the most recent generation of GP2 cars, where they were lacking on the power side relative to downforce, where you pretty much, you knew for most parts, you were going to have that grip there. Someone who is used to that, say, Jordan King, might not transition as well as he hoped.
Yeah, because now you have a car with similar mechanical grip, but way less topside aero. It's heavier, so you brake a lot sooner, and that's going to throw you off. And also, you have a whole lot less power and a lot more torque.
Yeah.
Sweet. See, you know, these cars, you know, look awesome, and they sound very, very promising. I can't wait for March. Can we get to March now, please? I want to see these cars on track. Please, for the love of God.
The one thing that might not be making it in this year is the windshield.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Good point.
We're talking about this. They may push it back a little bit longer because, you know, they need to test this thing.
Even though, like, it's been, you know, delayed again and again because they said they were going to run it before the end of the year, then that didn't happen, and then they said they're going to run it at a, you know, a test coming up, and it seems like that's not going to happen. So, like, 2018 seemed to be off the table by, like, a long, like, well before now.
Indeed. So, yeah, that it's been pushed back a year, but, yeah, seems like they're going to take their time in getting this right, which, again, hardly a bad thing either. Rather a slow burn than anything else, but, yeah, we'll see how that holds up. King, can we fangirl now?
Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Schmidt Peterson, the rumors were true.
The rumors were true.
Yes. 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 They did it, guys. They did it. They did it. King, tell them what they did.
Yes. New at Schmidt Peterson, they announced that they have a new lead engineer for the number 5 Aero Dallara, driven by James Hinchcliffe. That new lead engineer is Lena Gade.
Ah!
Yes.
Yes. It's beautiful. Oh,
who is Lena Gade? Well, for those of you who maybe follow IndyCar but don't follow sports car racing so much, Lena Gade was the brains and the engineer behind Audi's wins at Le Mans in 2011 and 2012 and 2014 with Andre Lauter, Marcel Fassler, and Benoit Trelier. She is easily the most visible woman on the engineering side of motorsport, perhaps the most visible woman of color in all of motorsport, and she's joining Schmidt Peterson with arguably the series' most popular driver, and she comes in with a pretty positive attitude. She's moved over from basically heading up all of Bentley Racing's organization because she really wanted to get back into the engineering side of things.
Wow. And she gets to engineer my boy's car. Ah! I'm so happy about this. This is so cool. Gang, like, SPM new favorite team.
New favorite team. They've pretty much, I would say, besides this hiring, they make key hirings elsewhere. They're looking to be contenders this year.
Right. Yeah, they're going all in on this.
They're willing to throw as many awesome people as they can because they're probably, of the teams that are kind of stuck in IndyCar's proverbial midfield, they're probably the closest to challenging the likes of Penske, Andretti, and Ganassi on a consistent in-and-out and in-and-out basis.
Yeah.
The one thing that Lena admits that she doesn't have that much experience with is setting up the cars for ovals, but she's not a total novice because she got to go to the Phoenix race last year to kind of get an idea of what that whole genre of racing is all about. It's a very different thing to set up a car for a road course compared to an oval. There's a whole lot more nuance, and if Lita can pull it off, which I know she has the ability to do, because my goodness, she's got experience engineering single-seaters. She used to work in A1GP, and before that, Formula V was her gateway into racing. Not only that, her sister is a racing engineer as well, who has also worked in single-seaters. This is certainly the most exciting engineer hire, perhaps in IndyCar history. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Just what she brings from an entirely different world of motorsport to become a genuine fan favorite as an engineer. That's amazing.
That's nuts.
And now she gets to come to IndyCar.
Yeah.
Yeah, where we don't... Engineering stars are a dime a dozen, and it normally doesn't really work out the way you think it does. Because the last race engineer that I could say that was extremely notable just by existing was Adrian Newey, and that was before he was the Newey that we know him today.
Yeah, that juggernaut. But yeah, wow. What a pull. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Again, I'm still kind of in awe of this. Like, King, help me out here.
Like, well, yeah, the series themselves, like the IndyCar series, have, you know, announced that she's the first female race engineer that the series has ever had. Though on Racer.com, Marshall Pruitt was quick to point out that she's the first female race engineer that the Verizon IndyCars, that the IRL has ever had. CART, you know, had a female engineer back in 96, also an English woman, Diana Hull. And now she is actually head of vehicle performance in NASCAR at Hendrick Motorsports.
Damn. So, like, still very prominent role.
Yeah, you like Jimmy Johnson's 7 championships?
Ah, yeah, that's a nice one to have on the resume. Just throwing that out there, I wouldn't mind having that one next to the whole run to podcast thing. that wouldn't be bad. So yeah,
right. Worked with Adrian Fernandez and Tony Kanaan in her time in the CART World Series paddock. That's a pretty stout resume. I'm excited for Lena coming over to IndyCar. I hope she has a lot of fun here.
Yeah.
I hope so, because the IndyCar series is just such a fun series, and it's one where the racing, I've always felt, and the personalities of it shine greater than anything else. And yeah, like, if the series is that excited about an engineer at the end of the day, in any series, that's massive. And for one of her resume, which is stacked, to say the least, that's unbelievable. So, yeah, SPM, awesome hire. That, like, I can't wait to see how they get along. And as a James Hinchcliffe fan, very easy to get excited about that one. Just throwing that out there. I'm just saying, like, you know, the slightly biased opinion of me is very relevant here.
I also want to point out Lena Gade is a very engaging interview. Like, she spoke with John Hinow of Midweek Motorsport this past week, and they basically just shot the breeze about everything from racing to America's Cup.
Wow.
It's a very fun interview. She's a great color commentator and analyst as well. Worth listening to it on Series 13, Episode 2.
Nice one.
We have other team related news. This is kind of an open, because I thought this was already a done deal that they were going to run full time, but Harding Racing are going full time, and they're going full time with Gabby Chavez.
Yep, the 2014 Indy Lights champion has a full time ride, and they may be a one car team, but they're certainly not going to be running around the back.
I don't know. I mean, have we said, like, who's president of that team?
No, we did not say, and that is one Brian Barnard, former, you know... former race director and VP of competition for IndyCar, Jay Fry's current position.
Boo!
All the loopholes.
And, you know... Gabby Chavez has done very well at that team during his, you know, one-off outings.
Indeed.
Last year. Pretty sure, what, he got fifth place in Texas?
He got fifth in Texas. He got ninth in Indianapolis.
Yeah, very, very solid driver indeed.
Very first race.
Yeah, I mean, we don't talk about that race so much now for obvious reasons, but I do remember his last oval race at the Tricky Triangle, where he was running second and could have very easily won that race before his engine died, I think, 2 laps from the end. The guy is a very talented all-rounder. And yeah, like, gosh, like, we've now got 22 cars in the field with Gabby Chavez now. Again, this was kind of one of those another, like, worst kept secret sort of moments, because most of us kind of knew Chavez was going to be there. full time, but that is now absolutely confirmed.
Well, Chavez's driver coach has been promoted to an executive consultant, and his driver coach was...
Oh, who is that driver coach?
Little Al. Al Unser Jr.
As in, wow. That guy everybody brings up as an Indy 500 winner on like that quiz they have on IndyCar's YouTube channel. That guy. But yeah, little Al will be joining the team, as well as retaining his job as driver coach. Yay! That's always cool.
And, oh god, with Carlin's two entries and Harden's full-time entry, the full-time field is now at 22 cars for the IndyCar series.
22! Oh man!
That is just gangster. 22 cars now. It's like, is that everybody now that's going to be running full-time this year, I reckon?
Most likely. That is most likely our full-time runners. The only technically full-time seat left is the shared seat with Ed Carpenter at Ed Carpenter Racing.
And that's already been booked up, so that really only leaves the 19 car of Dale Coyne Racing.
Oh, yeah.
And we still really don't know who the hell is taking that seat.
I already thought TBA was confirmed.
Yeah, TBA for the championship. Yeah.
Woo!
Reliable.
Yeah, I think my gut feeling is it's going to be a full-time car with a bunch of part-time drivers. That's my gut feeling for the 19 at Dale Coyne.
Hashtag bring back Dracone.
Hashtag there's going to be another Canadian.
Woo! But Canada's team is Motorsports 101's team. Isn't that right, King?
No, there's going to be a third Canadian from Montreal. And he has his own shoe line.
Zach Clayman de Mello leads.
Oh, God.
We mentioned him on the last show. And his shoe line. His shoe line of very expensive shoes. They're probably overmarked. But that's fine. You get your money.
You can
also buy in Florence. Don't forget. You can get these shoes in Florence.
I think we should move on.
Yeah, swiftly.
Yes. Let's talk Danica.
Oh, I'm out.
We're talking.
Why are we doing
Danica
this again?
On the podcast, we are talking Danica Patrick. Danica Patrick mania has swept the Motorsport 101 podcast.
Damn it. When I looked at the set list, I thought it was Dan Patrick. I thought Dan Patrick was going to be in the 500.
Damn it.
Are you sure you don't just mean Jenny Fryer?
Oh, God.
Oh, my goodness. What good would Dan Patrick be? We already have one driver that peaked in 1996, and Buddy Lazier is still trying to get his shit together.
But yes. In all seriousness, GoDaddy announced that they will be partnering with Danica Patrick to sponsor her rides for the Daytona 500 and the Indianapolis 500. Days later, about 4 or 5 days later, it was announced that Danica had a ride for Daytona with Premium Motorsports. With a name like that.
And the crowd goes mild. It's like...
It's trending all over Motorsport Blast News, by the way.
Stop but using somebody... buzzwords that don't mean anything, Jenna Fryer.
But Zoe, you should be up to the series to find her a seat. She's Danica.
To say it should be up to the series to decide who races and does not race in your series would be like, hey, Roger Goodell, why doesn't Colin Kaepernick have a job right now? Like, no one would ever say that.
You sure about that?
So a little bit about Premium Motorsports. Yes, they're based in the heart of NASCAR country. They are essentially, like a lot of these teams that have recently gotten out of business, like Michael Waltrip Racing in particular is one of them. They're basically just take what was left of those teams that have gone out of business and just run them with like a fourth of the resources. I'm not saying that Danica Patrick is going to have a hard time in this car for Premium Motorsports, because we've seen We've seen unsuspecting drivers finish up at the front and, heck, nearly win this, actually win the Daytona 500. See Derek Cope in 1990 and Trevor Bayne in 2011 for more. But she's not going to have it as good as she had in the last five seasons with Stewart Haas Racing.
Yeah, and like a lot of people are pointing out the what I like to call intangibles around this situation, where as a crew chief, she's going to be reunited with Tony Urie Jr., and apparently her ride's going to have a technical partnership with Richard Childress Racing, and I'm like, what good is that going to do? We're like 3 weeks out from qualifying.
Yeah, you have all the blocks in place, but you really need about 6 weeks to put it all together, and you've only got three. I guess it's a good thing that they don't really like preseason tests anymore, at least not to the public eye.
Yeah.
Danica, what's the latest on Danica's Indianapolis 500 drive? The motorsport world needs to know. Packers Nation needs to know.
Oh, God. Well, they're too busy, like, sacrificing, like, their firstborn to bring back Aaron Rodgers' shoulder, basically. But
they're praying on that yoga. They're like, Danica, please yoga Aaron Rodgers back to full health.
Yeah, like, get that fitness plan together. The 90-day fitness plan to work, you know, mind, body, and soul to get Rodgers back in for next September. But it also turns out that GoDaddy is back.
Yeah, we kind of talked about that, Dre.
Yeah. Like, I thought I'd remind the listeners because we have to talk about Danica more. Okay? I thought I'd try and start that out.
Let's just say someone got their wish and the Speedway has gotten involved. Mm-hmm. Even though the options that are left are not what people expected when we started out, and it seems to be really... The only way it could happen is through connections with the Speedway, where, you know, someone who's related to the owners of the Speedway, Ed Carpenter and Dreier Rainbolt Racing, who are related to Danica as well. Like, pretty much those are only two options left. People who are either related to the Speedway or Danica.
Yikes.
They're not bad seats. Ed Carpenter Racing can do fine things on, especially at Indianapolis. I mean, heck, it's the reason why Ed Carpenter's still sticking around. Dreier Rainbolt Racing can build a capable car, so long as Sage Karam can keep it in one piece.
Yeah. And the only issue I see with this is, Dreier Rainbolt, they've run a second car at Indianapolis before. I don't see that being an issue for them. If Ed Carpenter were to run a third car, like, they'd have to hire new staff. They was like, this would be a rough around the edges package.
Indeed. And the problem is, if Ed Carpenter Racing, a lot of the time is, well, it's Ed. Like, surely Ed would put all his eggs in his own basket to try and help himself win more than having Danica there. Like, if anything, I'd argue having Danica there is actually kind of counterproductive.
And, like, yeah, if Ed runs a third car for Danica, what happens to Jordan King? Does Jordan King not run the Indianapolis 500?
That could be problematic.
Yeah, very problematic.
I'm sure Jordan King would have probably expected, hey, like, if I'm going to be an Indy car, I've got to run the 500, right?
Right?
Shit. Unless Carpenter's running four cars all of a sudden. Unlikely. So, yeah, that's going to be problematic, to say the least.
You know what's really problematic is the fact that Danica Patrick has six top 10 finishes in the Indianapolis 500, and I don't think Ed Carpenter has half of that.
That's... Yeah, but I'm not saying anything bad, but it's been how long since Danica's driven an IndyCar?
Yeah, I mean, there's also that. It's been 7 years. The cars are way, way, way different. We are one entire new chassis, one new formula, and two revised aero kits since Danica Patrick's last drive in the Indianapolis 500.
We are a long ways from Danica Mania, yo.
We're a long way from Texas.
The one thing I do have to say about GoDaddy is it's nice that they supported Danica rather than, you know, the guy that, like, won races for them and basically started an entire ad campaign for or inspired an ad campaign for them.
Zoe, if you're hot, say you're hot. Like, you know, like.
Let's just say that certain Canadian didn't get the click throughs that, you know, Danica did.
Hashtag hinge for homepage, goddammit.
Whose homepage? It can be anybody's homepage now. It doesn't have to be GoDaddy's.
He's a free man.
Put James Hinchcliffe on our homepage. He has nothing to do with this podcast. We just want to give him that homepage.
I'll get Steph on it. ASAP. Just because.
Just because. Okay. So, let me see what the poll speed was. It was 2:27 last time Danica won. Let me see what the poll speed was at last year's 500, because it was certainly...
I believe it was 2:32.1 with Dixon, I believe, wasn't it?
Yeah, the cars have gotten a whole lot faster at the speedway. They're going to get faster this year, because they're not going to have as much drag as they had, you know... They're going to have as much drag as they had last year because of the new aero kits. So they're potentially going to be, like, 2:35, like, really getting close to track record, but not, you know, easy enough to break it.
This is Norman, my good luck charm. 2:32 every day.
So,
but yeah, it has been a long time. I want to say it was 2:32.1 was Dixon's last year. So that's going to be your baseline here.
Yeah, it's going to be the fastest Danica's ever gone at the speedway, guaranteed.
Yikes, that's going to be a loss. Mm-hmm.
And I want to say that the month of May is like, oh, she'll have enough practice to get into it, but it's like, because of the Grand Prix now and other things, the month of May isn't as long as it used to be.
Indeed. You know, but hey, we'll have Danica back, and it'll be nice for a bit.
We might even have Joe Rogan around. Did anybody watch or listen to that episode of JRE?
No.
I did not, know.
Because I don't have 10 hours to set aside for that.
No, I didn't either. Like, it's like 3 hours long, and I was like, you know what? I don't like Danica Patrick enough to listen to 3 hours of for the sake of a podcast. I just don't have it in me.
Like, being generally honest, I think I like Joe Rogan more than Danica Patrick. That's how low the bar was.
I want to see Joe Rogan in the booth for the Indianapolis 500 just to wake Eddie and Scott up.
It's like,
oh, that Honda engine is finished, Mike.
He's out.
But yeah, what? Part of me wants to say, what are the chances Danica actually retires? Like, I'm pretty sure she's done. I want to say she's
nil, done. Nil. Like she'll fluke a top 10 in like the Daytona, and then she'll be like, you know what? I can come back next year.
You don't fluke a top 10 at Daytona.
You know what I meant. It's like, I don't think anybody's expecting her to finish that high in that sense. But like,
no, people are not expecting her to finish. Like.
Here's the thing. Why didn't you go to sports cars?
Because...
Not enough money in the game?
Yeah.
Not enough skin in the game?
Yeah, you really have to care about racing to like sports cars. To you know, do that as your job. She'd rather not be racing at all.
Yeah, she's already got her sights set on like entrepreneurship after racing. And I mean, that's okay.
Yeah, you do
sure.
you.
Sure. Do you. Get your bread. Get your bread.
It's just, you know, having a farewell tour called the Danica Double. It's grating. It's grating that you feel that you need to have this big, spectacular farewell tour when, like, most people say farewell to what?
But that's like the new trend of American sports. Like, Derek Jeter had an enormous retirement tour. Kobe Bryant essentially ruined his own Lakers team for the sake of a farewell tour, which I'm totally not salty about.
Only extremely popular and successful athletes get farewell tours, and that's because they choose to. In racing, we don't have that. We have Scott Pruitt announcing at the Roar Before 24, yeah, guys, I'm hanging it up. And that's it. That's it.
The only real farewell tour I can think of was Mario Andretti.
Oh, yeah, Mario had a farewell tour. But, like, Mario's farewell tour, it's like, it was a long time coming. Like, he was in his 50s.
Mario Andretti, you can sit there and go, yeah, you've been racing since 1959. Yeah, I think it might be time for you to hang up your helmet in 1994.
Yeah. Different from AJ Foyt in 1993. It was just like, well, I ain't quick enough to do this shit. Okay, bye.
Yeah, I've had enough. I'm hanging up the gloves. My son can take over. We got this.
But again, like, it's... Finishing Daytona is still a question mark. You have to... You have to, you know, get your car in the race first.
Yeah, that would be ideal, and that's no guarantee over that side. But to answer your question, King, I don't think this is the end. I really don't. Like, something in me says, you know what, there'll be one more race.
There'd be, like, either Danica does really well, and she's like, hey, I got more in me, or Danica does very poorly, and she's like, I don't want to go out like that. Like, that's that gut feeling in me.
That's what I'm thinking.
I think this is it. And the reason why I think it, at least on the NASCAR side of it, this is a sport that's cutting back on a lot of salaries. They're hiring youth, they're hiring from the within, and they're slashing their drivers' salaries by cutting more expensive veteran drivers.
Oh, no. If I think Danica doesn't retire, she's not going to NASCAR. She's not going to NASCAR.
You reckon?
I reckon it's IndyCar. Well, yeah, it's like, IndyCar.
I've joked about it before, but, like, it feels a lot sometimes like that her NASCAR, like, run is basically the blue screen of death.
Like, no offense to Pippa Man, but it really feels like Danica is heading down that route, where she's going to be a permanent part-time fixture in the IndyCar series.
Hey, man, gotta sell those books.
Gotta sell those books.
Work it fierce. Oh. But, you know, that's the impression that I get anyway. You know, go that easy. You can always go back to Hinch. Just throwing that out there, you know.
Or Tim Hortons, if you would be really so kind and just sponsor James and Robert.
I can have Timbits. I need to experience this in my life at some point.
Yeah. Well, when you come to Glasgow in the summer.
Yes, and we will eat Timbits in Jim Clark's room. Yes, of course. The dream. Living the dream.
You brought him up that time, not me.
You love it, Zoe.
Besides, there's one in Glasgow. There's one in a big shopping centre just outside Glasgow. And there's one in my town. There's nowhere else.
Yay!
Not even London.
There's one coming up in London soon. I know that they're slowly building one in London. So that will be a thing eventually, but we're still not there yet.
There is one story that has come up that I feel like we need to discuss.
Do we now? Tell us more.
That IndyCar has confirmed a number of rule changes for the upcoming season. And let's just say, besides an increase in minimum car weight, they've confirmed that the points rules will now be changed for the Indianapolis 500. That
yes,
it will no longer be scored as if it was a full race.
Thank God. I'm here for this. Yeah. This was always silly to me.
So,
so
basically, if you make it into the Fast 9 this year, you score points. And the way it breaks down, pole sitter gets 9 points, and you go all the way down to the guy who gets who qualifies ninth gets a single point. Instead of last year, where Scott Dixon got pole and got 42 points.
Mm-hmm.
Which probably gave him the outsider chance come Sonoma after his big crash at the race itself.
Sounds good to me.
And something the drivers were hoping to get changed on the ovals. The lottery system that was previously used will be scrapped in favor of doing qualifying order in reverse order of entrant points. So basically reverse car points. So your car has you're in the championship leading car, you get to qualify last. Your car has the least amount of points, you qualify first.
Yikes. Okay.
So yeah, pretty much all the top drivers last year said, we hate the randomness of oval qualifying. The track could be green. We could draw a number and end up having to qualify on a green track first. They want to get rid of that, so they're like, okay, we'll just do reverse entrant points.
Okay. I mean, I'll be honest. As much as I say this as a Hinchcliffe fan that benefited from the old system quite massively,
yes.
I couldn't be behind 50 points for Indy 500 pole position. I think that's just silly. I think that's just too much for me, I think, more than anything else. I like the change for what it's worth. I mean, what do you guys reckon?
Great call.
Part of me loved the randomness on the ovals. I can see why the drivers didn't like, stuck in a situation completely out of their own control, but it made for entertaining racing. So
For the sake of competitive parity, though, wouldn't it be more counterproductive? Wouldn't it be more productive to have the teams that are the back end of the championship qualify last on a track that's more rubbered in?
Yes, but,
That requires logic, RJ.
The top drivers want to be the fastest guys out there. They're not going to, sacrifice. They're like, hey, I hate that I get caught out on a green track, so let's all be out on a green track. No, no, no.
The other thing is, it's that kind of a bonus for if you're in the front half, leading the championship, or you're in the top five, by the time you get to go out, you're getting the more rubbered in track. It's like the pit lane organizing.
Yeah, you basically get rewarded for doing well, which kind of causes a cycle.
Yeah. In a series where, IndyCar thrives off of competitive balance, that could be a problem.
Yeah. Dre, I say, this might sound crazy, but after every fifth season of IndyCar, every driver has to be a free agent. I'm not saying that.
Now there's an idea. I can get behind this, personally.
Jimmy Haslam just looking at the Indian Premier League Super Draft model like, I think we got a way to bring this Browns team back to the top.
The Browns team back to the top is like, first the Grand Prix of Cleveland, next the Super Bowl.
Led by Aaron Rodgers.
It's like, you can't hear it in the background, but I'm furiously playing the urinating tree from YouTube segment of the Browns going 0-16! Which won my brother £1,000, which I'm still very, very jealous of him for that one. Seriously, I wanted to stab him after Pittsburgh coughed that one up.
One slightly minor story that our boys at Penske, Joseph Newgarden and Elio Castroneves, will be driving in Scandinavia's Rallycross on Ice.
Wait, what?
Yes.
They're going snow racing.
Yes, they are scheduled to participate in four rounds of the Rallycross, actually two rounds of the Rallycross and Ice series, which is like a winter Rallycross mini-series that they have in Sweden and Norway during the off-season. They'll be driving in Supercar Lights, which is basically Rallycross's GP2.
That's awesome.
And Penske, of course, looking for a way to get a one-up on Andretti and Ganassi, considering they already have established Rallycross programs.
Yeah.
We can do this, too!
Yep. The big three go to war again. And I think it's time for our main event, previewing the, what I'd like to call, the all-star game of American motorsport. The Rolex 24 at Daytona.
Yeah, boy. I'm going to shut up for the next half hour. Boys, you're up.
And let's bring Zoe into this one. Now, now, of course, there are a lot of wonderful resources to preview this. I'm going to post a link to Andy Blackmore Design Spotter Guides, so that way we can all get a look at this awesome 50-car field. Three classes, 20 in the top class. We have two active Formula One World Championship drivers. And that may not be the most intriguing part of this. It probably is.
It is.
You know, it probably is.
Let's call a spade a spade here, RJ, you know?
You are watching this for Fernando Alonso.
Yes.
But you could be watching for a certain super team that has come back to the sport with a manufacturer looking to, you know, bring glory to the... to that, you know, small place in Detroit, you know. Hi, Roger. I know you don't listen to this podcast.
But we listen to you.
Oh, my goodness. So, in case you missed it last year, Wayne Taylor Racing won this race with their new Cadillac DBI-VR. Cadillacs were very, very quick last year. They were also quick in the preseason test. They were 1 through 4. Things are different at Wayne Taylor Racing this year because Brother Ricky is not with the team because he's been hired by Acura Team Penske. Jordan Taylor and Ranger Van de Zanda and Ryan Hunter-Reay are out to defend the title. Cadillac's still quick even after balance of performance nerfs. It's either them or it's going to be an Orica 07 LMP2 car based on the preseason testing. Then again, it is a 24-hour race, and we did see even last year the most unlikely of challengers can pop up, and the Cadillacs are certainly not bulletproof.
Yes. And we do need to talk about the arrival of Penske, where they've landed Jordan Taylor. Not only have they landed Jordan Taylor, they've landed
Ricky Taylor.
Ricky Taylor.
They've landed Jordan
Taylor. Great start, fellas.
Sorry.
They have a Taylor brother.
Have the charismatic one.
Yes, they have Simon. They have Simon Pagenaud. They have Juan Pablo Montoya. They have Dane Cameron, who's a former IMSA prototype champion. They have Elio Castroneves, and they have Dre's favorite, Graham Rahal.
Excuse me.
All in a two-car effort with an Orica-based Acura ARX 05 DPI. It looks beautiful.
Yes.
Hopefully, it's as quick as it looks. It certainly does look the part. Because if any team is going to jump into this with both feet, jumping in first, it's going to be Acura Team Penske. But of course, success is not guaranteed, even for a team of their pedigree. Same with Mazda Team Yost. That's Yost is in Yost Racing, the people that engineered Audi's Dynasty of Le Mans. They're back. They've got a pretty intriguing driver lined up at their own with two Mazda RT24P DPIs. They've got Spencer Pigott in one car and Harry Tignall as well. They don't have James Hinchcliffe, but they've also got Renee Rast in car number 77. That's your DTM champion.
Yep.
And the car
I'm still mad about no. I'm still mad about no Hinch.
that's understandable. But I'm very intrigued to see where this team goes because Mazda now have a team that has a lot more research, a lot more personnel running this team that have experience at this high level. No disrespect to the folks at Speed Source, but it was clear that they could only go so far with them. Mazda Team Yost, there might be something there. The preseason testing times weren't all that convincing, but there's still plenty of time, especially as the IMSA season progresses.
Oh, I think we should move on to the other Cadillac team.
Oh, yes. Action Express Racing, split into two parts. The number 5 car, headed by Joe Bobrovsek, Felipe Albuquerque, and Christian Fittipaldi. Still sore from last year's loss. I'm very intrigued at the number 31 car, which has Mike Conway, Stuart Middleton, the Sunoco Challenge winner, Eric Curran, and Felipe Nasr of recent Formula One fame.
Felipe Nasr do Brasil!
Yes, indeed. They were passed in preseason testing. And, golly, looking up and down this list, of course you've got the two Tequila Patron ESM Nissans, Pipo Durrani, our wonderful, yes, hashtag Poop Durrani, still doing awesome things in that Nissan DPI. They're coming at it with a lot more horsepower than they did this time a year ago. And there's a lot of intriguing entries with the international cars. JDC Miller Motorsports were probably the underdog story of the year throughout the entire IMSA season. Jackie Chan, DC Racing, and Jota. Can we talk about this driver lineup and just this one car of Lance Stroll, Felix Rosenquist, Danny Yocandela, and Robin Frenz? And that's not even what Keem is most excited about. Because in the 78 car, they have Ho Pin Tung, Alex Brundle, Antonio Felix da Costa, and Ferdinand Habsburg.
Yeah, Jota Sport is team boys for me. That this one of their two cars, please finish on the podium. Please.
If you want a sleeper pick, though, I'm looking at Core Autosport in that number 54 car just because they have Romain Dumas and Loic Duval, a combined 324 wins between them. That team's going to be one to watch, and a lot of people are looking at the number 90 car, the Spirit of Daytona Racing team.
Or as I like to call the Big K pick.
Yes, the Big K pick, as selected by friend of the show David Land to win the whole thing. A very bold move, although it does make sense when you consider that they are also switching to Cadillac this season. But know who everybody is here to see? That's right, Brendan Gaughan in the number 20 Bar 1 Motorsports prototype. No, we're here to see Fernando Alonso. We're here to see United Autosports. We're here to see Nando Norris. Sorry, Lando Norris.
I see what you did there. How very Chris Cook of you.
We're here to see Alonso, Norris, and Phil Hansen, who's going to be the X-Factor of the team, because nobody really knows who Phil Hansen is. He's a very capable driver in sports cars, but he's not a household name to the degree of, certainly, a Fernando Alonso.
You don't say.
And no pressure. And they may want to watch that other United Sports Autosports entry. Yes, there's two of them, because their lineup is headed by LMP2 world champion Bruno Senna, and recent Williams test and reserve and occasional race driver Paul de Resta.
Hopefully he actually likes this car.
Oh my goodness. This prototype field is double C thick, and it may not even be the most intriguing class. King, let's spin it on over to everybody's favorite bar fight, GTLM.
Ooh, it is the bar fight of bar fights. It is... Man, last year, they gave us a show and a half.
Tell them, we got BMW M8s in the field. And these are actual GTE cars and not just GT3 cars with some bodywork changes. We got Corvettes. We got Fords. We got Porsches with the engine slightly above the front axle, which is a little weird, but it works. Trust me, it sounds really nice, too. And, of course, we got one Ferrari in the field run by some dudes in Houston.
As you do. Just because.
Yep, Ford are the reigning champions. If you're looking to bandwagon the folks who have recent single-seater experience, Sebastian Bourdais is in car 66, and Scott Dixon is in car 67. The 66 team of Bourdais, Joey Hand, and Dirk Moeller are the defending champions of the category. In this race, the number 3 Corvette racing car of Antonio Garcia and Jan Magnussen, joined by Mike Rockenfeld for this race, are the defending series champions. Of course, everybody's going to be intrigued to see how the new BMW M8 gets along. It wasn't all that quick in testing, so we'll see how this comes along. I'm also intrigued to see how Porsche gets along in year 2 of the 911 RSR.
Yeah, it is. Ooh, if you like GT cars, if you like the cars, you're definitely in for a show in this class.
Yeah,
you've got
another
Nick Tandy in one. You've got Earl Bamber in another. You have Earl Bamber in a car with Lawrence Vanthoort, and for the first time in a full season on Porsche, Gian Maria Bruni of recent Ferrari GT fame. Who on paper that lineup should win everything and everything?
Like in the words of good friend of the show, George Marlin, like we have Tandy the God. That is all that needs to be said about
Tandy
this.
The God. But
God himself is among us.
But it's Daytona, so everyone has brought a gun to a knife fight, and it ain't going to be pretty.
Yep.
These firearms are not registered. Nobody seems to mind much. GT Daytona, this is effectively your GT3 class. We've got a lot of cars here. Let's just hit the highlights. Scott Pruitt, his final race, he's driven for what? 97 years at this point. He's won about 20 Rolex 24s to his name, I guess. He's going to be driving a Lexus. He's going to be driving a Lexus RCF GT3. They've got an interesting lineup at 3 GT Racing with Bruno Junqueira coming back in another car. And the car Scott Pruitt is driving will have former IndyCar driver, the stateless Jack Hawksworth, sticking it around for
Stateless Hawksworth. He's back.
Yes. The reigning winners from this race are not back, but the ones that almost took the runners-up, Land Motorsport, obviously paying homage to their relative David Land from the show. They're back in this. It looks like it's going to be a field where the German manufacturers, particularly Audi, Mercedes, AMG, and Porsche, are going to have a field day of this. But of course, they've got to get through the defending champions at Scuderia Corsa. Different driver lineup and a two-car team in this field. The 63 car is the team that has won the last two championships, but it's a 64 car that has RI because it has Townsend Bell and Sam Bird as part of the driver lineup, and that's really all we need to see.
Oh, hail the flat cap! Yeah. Oh, hail the flat cap!
Probably my pick to win it would be the 44 Audi from Magnus Racing with Andy Lally, Marcus Winklehawk, John Potter, and Andrew Davis. They're probably my pick to go all the way.
Yes.
No Magnus one can break the Winkle Rock.
Magnus Racing also coming back after 2 years in the Pirelli World Challenge. And of course, Andy Lally is driving in a GT category that no longer has his arch nemesis, Sage Karam, in it.
Oh, no.
Porsche's got some good driver lineups. Christina Nielsen is now a Porsche driver. She's driving for Wright Motorsports with Porsche mainstay Patrick Long and youngster Matthew Jaminet. I'm really intrigued about Manthe Racing because they've got a five-driver lineup led by youngsters Sven Muller and Matteo Cairoli, who are both really awesome in their own right. There's more Hondas. Michael Schenck Racing has Catherine Legg and AJ Altmendinger in the 86 car. And these cars look mean. There's also a new team, Honda American Racing Team, or HART, in car number 69.
Nice.
And that is going to be a nice car, especially with John Faulb and Sean Rahal leading the charge there. There's so many good cars in this field. It's tough to pick a winner. It really is.
Yeah.
I'm going to force you here, RJ. You know how this works.
Give me. I'm going off the board with a car I haven't talked about yet, and that's Mercedes AMG Riley Motorsports car led by Jerome Blickemull and Ben Kading, car 33. They were very impressive on their debut in this race a year ago. I think they go all the way this time. They won two races in this category last year. Give me also car 912 to win it in GTLM. and for the prototype category, this one's tough. I've been flipping back and forth between the 5 and the 10. I think the 5 gets the Mustang Sampling Racing and Action Express gets a bit of a come up instead. It's very hard to say. Words are hard. It's 6:30 in the morning.
Yep.
Number 5 card wins it.
Okay. King, who are you going with?
Oh, I already picked my guys. The 44 Audi.
Yeah. 40, the 44 Audi. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. That was. Yep. Yeah, so the whole weekend starts up. Well, probably by the it'll probably have already started by the time this goes out. Obviously, practice starts up on Thursday.
We need to put this up during the middle of the race when Kansas race has been sabotaged.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for, like, oh god, man, team boys, they wrecked out on lap 5.
Yeah, and of course it's all gonna, and of course everybody would blame Lance Stroll in that case, even when he didn't start it.
But
his presence in the team caused him to spin.
We got a little bit of time left, so we talked about the Rolex 24. We need to talk about the other big event this weekend, because I know if you listen this far in the show, you probably want to hear our opinions on this, the Royal Rumble.
Who is this we?
What is this opinions? I'm picking an all-Japanese sweep of the Royal Rumbles. I think Asuka wins the Women's Royal Rumble, and Shinsuke Nakamura wins the Men's Royal Rumble. It's probably not going to play out like this, of course, because I don't work for WWE Creative. I don't know how the fuck this works.
Yeah.
I just like to go with the results that feel right in my gut.
Yeah,
and I don't think anybody knows how the WWE creative department
and
works at this point.
I get very mad online when things are not run my way.
Right.
Yeah, I want to go with RJ. I want it to be Asuka and Nakamura, but I have a feeling, I have that gut feeling that somewhere deep down, looking ahead at WrestleMania, just glaring out his window, just Vince McMahon's going to be like, I need Rousey to win the Rumble.
Not even the best UFC fan champion they could have gotten.
No. Oh, God. Jeez, me. I want Shinsuke Nakamura to win the Rumble, but I have a bad feeling it's going to go to John Cena. Him being the free agent, I think it gives him the most wiggle room creatively speaking. So I think it's going to be Cena's year to win the Rumble, which will split the internet like he always does. Why? Because John Cena.
But it's like, again, like, it gives you freedom, but what would they do? Like, yeah, John Cena has a main event at WrestleMania. Like,
he's cashing it in to be the star of the new Duke Nukem.
I did hear about this.
It's already been decided.
I'm Scott Dixon.
Yeah, sure.
Scott
Always
Dixon,
a solid pick.
Scott Dixon on a fuel economy run. But there's no cars in this Royal Rumble.
Nah.
It's amazing. He's lasted 50 minutes.
Nah, he's going to be the 65-minute man.
Just and he'll eliminate 14 people in the process because it's Roman Reigns. Break all the records, you know.
I would
but,
have no problems with Roman Reigns winning again in Philadelphia just to make people upset again.
No! I'm not here for Roman Reigns, everybody. Like, sorry, I'm that guy.
I'm here for Roman Reigns because he shows up to work, he wrestles some fun, entertaining matches, and he doesn't get himself in trouble by disrespecting women. By comparison, he's amazing as a wrestling talent.
Yeah.
I want him to main event the next 20 WrestleManias until he's 60 years old.
Like,
and say it with me, people. Have higher standards, 2K18. Okay, thanks. But yeah, I think Cena will win the Rumble on my end. I've always said that. I think Asuka will take the women's side as well. It's natural progression. You're building Asuka to be a beast. Having her win the Rumble makes sense. Even if Rousey shows up and gets flipped out. But I think it's Cena's time this year. I think it's Cena's time. He's been due a push. he never seems to have him these days. But
like,
I
don't know. His theme song always seems to be like his time is now.
If the boot fits, Kim. If the boot fits, you know.
But
it's time.
Then okay. But quickly before we're gonna wrap it up. Then what would a main event at WrestleMania be with John Cena? How do you book that?
Just put him in with Styles again.
Zach Brown does it again. We get Cena versus Alonso in the Superdome.
Zach Brown. Fernando Alonso off the top rope. Oh, he's had a wardrobe malfunction. Another failure for Fernando in his career. Yeah. Oh dear.
Why did
you
agree to let Honda dress him?
Once again, it's conked out right at the main event.
Nah, I book it. I book Alonso over Cena due to interference from Asuka. It's book it, Vince.
Hmm. I'm okay with this.
No, we're overlooking as well Lewis Hamilton and his experience in the Lucha Libre ring.
I don't know what chance would be louder. Would it be Lewis sucks or Cena sucks? Like,
yes. That's my answer to the question. Yes, I'm on that one. So yeah, enjoy the Royal Rumble this weekend if you're watching that. Enjoy the Rolex 24 if you're watching that this weekend. And I think it's about time we get out of the Dodge. Faces, you can find us one more time. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We are on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. We're our personal Twitters, obviously, at Harrison101HD, at Ryan Eric King, at RJ O'Connell, and at We Zoe. And if you really, really like us, you can back us on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. Don't forget, $5 gets you early access to both this show and Bike Live, which returns next week from the Sepang test. So until next time,
sayonara.
Thanks very much for listening. Sleep with one eye open tonight, King.
Bye.
Later, y'all.
You are the world champion!
I have been upstaged.
I had to do it.
No, you didn't have to do it.
He did.
You stole my exit.
Now you know how I feel.
That's the one thing that's sacred to me, King.
Now you know how I feel, Dre.